This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yes, welcome in to this part two edition of UAP Weekly. I am Stephen Diener, back with you here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast Weekly Edition. And this is, I guess, well, you know, the second one of the week, but it's for good reason because it is part two of my discussion with Eric Hecker. And it really was quite an interesting discussion. If you heard part one, of course, there was a lot of ground covered there. And if you haven't heard it, by all means, feel free to do that. You don't have to hear them in order as far as, you know, for this one to make sense or for part one to make sense, because they're kind of independent of each other. But it was just, I felt I had to split it up because there was so much in the over an hour that we spoke that I didn't want to just, you know, bombard you with one giant interview. So I figured probably better to split this up. So what you're going to hear today in part two is something that might surprise you, actually. Now, and I feel I need to preface this because the first thing you're going to hear us talk about is the current whistleblower environment. And that was a question that I did have written down to ask Eric about. I really was curious to get his opinion on names like David Grush and more recently Jason Sands, these, you know, whistleblowers who have come out. Of course, Jason Sands is the recent one. I think we all are familiar with his story over the past week or two. You know, about his firsthand encounter with an alien back in the mid-90s. And I wanted to get, you know, he being a whistleblower himself, being a part of the disclosure conference that Dr. Greer held back in June of 23 in Washington, D.C., I felt, you know what, I'm sure he has an opinion on the current environment and some of those names that I mentioned, so let me ask him about it. And what he said actually kind of surprised me. And I'm not in the business of censoring anybody because I don't agree with their opinion, so obviously, it's this. What you're going to hear from Eric is his complete opinion, raw, unedited. Even though, and this is my preface, even though I don't agree with his estimation and what he says here in this interview about guys like David Grush and Jason Sands and others, by the way, even though I don't agree with his estimation, I'm not going to take that out because it is his opinion and I'm interviewing him. So I wanted to get his opinion on it. So even though it's something that I personally disagree with, you're going to hear his thoughts on it in full here. Plus, and maybe you'll agree with him and you just, you know, disagree with me. Like I said, always say, it's always up to you. That's what UAP is all about. So, you know, it's your call. But aside from that, we also get into his experiences on remote viewing, which again was my original idea in reaching out to him, was to ask his experiences on remote viewing, and it turned into everything else that you heard in part one and you're going to hear here in part two. So, you know, we covered a lot of ground. And also his thoughts on some rumors surrounding alien activity in Antarctica. So we get to a lot here in this part two. So enough of me talking about it. Let's go ahead and get to it. Here is Eric Hecker in my discussion with him, part two of this interview on UAP Weekly. Enjoy.
What are your thoughts? I'm curious on the whistleblower environment when you hear names like David Grush, when you hear names like Ryan Graves, or, you know, these men in the military who have come out to speak about what they've experienced in their roles within government and the intelligence agencies. And even recently, if you're not familiar with the name yet, because this is a new one, if you're not familiar, that's fine. But a name that's making the rounds now is Jason Sands. So I'm wondering where do you see the current climate right now in the whistleblower world?
I see it as a wildly controlled operation on a massive scale. I find there to be few and far between genuine people in the disclosure community, because they all seem to be working as some sort of clique and representing one way over here and representing another way over here. And, you know, it's just, it's an amazing network or organization. But if you pay attention to it long enough, you'll see all of the connecting nodes. So it's certainly not natural in how it's functioning. So to me, it's just, figuring out who the gatekeepers are, crashing through the gates. And this is the problem with truth and trying to get it to the people contemporarily, is that, you know, there's nothing stopping anybody from getting a microphone, getting a camera, starting a web page, So certainly if it's easy for me to do, if it's easy for you to do, it's also very easy for the alphabet agencies to do. And you think that they're just going to leave this amazing PR opportunity alone? I mean, obviously, this field or arena has to be top heavy with feds. It has to be. But I mean, folks, come on, think about it. There has to be more feds in content creation than there is non-feds, or the feds aren't doing their job. I mean, if we know they infiltrated the mass media when it was expensive to buy a reporter or a broadcast network to get them under the wing of the alphabet agency, well, now they don't have to waste all that money. They can just pay low-grade Fed wages to some knucklehead to be a content creator to try to, you know, manipulate conversations. It's very easy to do. It's just, it's botting in real time, trolling the world, brought to you by your tax dollars.
Well, I can promise you I'm not a Fed, but maybe that's what a Fed would say. I don't know.
but either way, like, this is, you know, this is... The logic still remains on the table to discuss. What percentage of content creators do people believe are feds? Because I suggest you need to bump your numbers up. And how come no one else is saying this? How come no one else in the community is concerned that disinformation is a game still being played and why this playing field would be avoided?
Let me throw the scenario out. So where's the disinformation and who is it against, right? So when we're talking about some of the names I mentioned, David Grush or Ryan Graves are now with Jason Sands, are they, in your estimation, the disinformation trying to point to different things to say, hey, look,
absolutely, because what evidence did anybody provide?
Or is it the people who are trying to disprove them?
It's them. How dare they get as far into the public eye as they're being pressed into when they have zero proof? When someone has zero proof and they're being put up on a pedestal, you have to ask why. Why are those people put on pedestal and the people who have proof, are they invest in ignoring them? If that's not showing the machinations of a system that is anti-truth, I mean, folks got to really get their blinders off and start paying attention to what's actually going on.
It's a theory that I think some people have put out there as far as who to trust, obviously, right? I mean, look, people argue all the time on Twitter and social media about, well, this guy's lying and this guy's lying. No, this guy's telling the truth. And
yep. And as they all reduce their social interactions, they all lose the ability to have that discernment that used to be built into every human being. Everybody was very confident when they, you know, got a read on someone at first sight, a gut feeling. Nobody would ever have a problem going against their own experience at the moment. But now all of a sudden, all that gets challenged. And what is your opinion compared to somebody else's opinion? And now people are more worried about making a politically correct response that's approved by society, so they get the right points for the day and pats on the back, versus what their own experience tells them is how they should function in a circumstance. So as we lose humanity, we lose that discernment, and we can now look at how those that are trying to control us that these are the manipulations, and they're getting exactly what they want. You're right. People don't seem to have the ability anymore to know who to trust. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that a massive problem that that's what's currently going on in our society, is people don't know who to trust anymore? Well, how did that occur?
Yeah,
it occurred because people intended for that to occur by separating us from each other for a few decades so that we no longer had the interactions that would give us that perspective and understanding.
So confusion and lack of discernment is the name of the game.
Absolutely. Disinformation, misinformation, lies, deception. That is what's going on. And the people are so far out of the loop as to what exists technologically and is being used about them. It's not like gunshots and gunfire. You don't see it, you don't hear it, but it doesn't mean that you're not caught in the crossfire of those wielding it against each other.
Well, it's really interesting. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit because there's a few more things I want to get to before we're done. And thank you so much, Eric, for spending all this time. And I really appreciate you coming back on.
You got
it. You know, second appearance here on UAP, and it's great to have you on because it's always a fascinating discussion, really thought-provoking. So on that note, kind of moving back just real quick to South to the South Pole, and I meant to bring this up before, so I don't mean to bounce back and forth on things.
That's all good.
When it comes to extraterrestrial involvement or interaction in Antarctica, I'm sure you're aware, there's been a lot of theories about Antarctica. There's a cave here that has been seen where UFO has been coming out of. There's a crash trail that's been shown on satellite imagery that shows, you know, a cigar-shaped, you know, UAP that had slid across the snow of Antarctica. And there's all these theories about the South Pole is being used basically as a hideaway for, you know, ETs.
I'm very open to all possibility existing always, and I'm not against the possibility of any of these things going on. The frustrating thing is that how often these sensational stories are brought up and dangled in front of the general population, again, with no proof. It's just simply speculating. It's no different. It's no different than just writing a fiction story that is not supported in reality. And every time people bring up a subject, you read a chapter out of this fantasy novel. Mm. And it seems to happen every time somebody brings up what is going on in verifiable reality. So to me, it just seems like a massive operation to keep people dumbed down, that every time the truth presents itself for a speckle of time, all of a sudden all these gatekeepers come running out of the woodwork with, did you know that there could be this? And maybe there's a that. And, oh, there was a picture on the internet. None of these things ever seem to come out with anybody ever putting their name on it. Nobody's ever said, I hiked into Antarctica. I found this hole. This is the picture I took. There's never any sources. It's always just this mystery. Trust me, I'm not an AI creating an article. And let's realize that the people that want to speculate for speculation's sake for ad nauseum are there to waste our time and energy from getting down to the problems. The term is actionable intelligence. That's what I'm trying to look for. They're not, no one's really bringing actionable intelligence to these conversations.
Right.
I'd like to think that I'm a diamond in the rough in that capacity, is that I've actually brought actionable intelligence. I can't make the actions occur, but the people that are hearing what I'm saying, those in the know, and I get that's few and far between, but there's a lot of people that do appreciate the information that I've put out there, and they do understand. There are folks that can do something about this if they choose to. There's not a lot of people in disclosure that can say that they've brought actionable intelligence to the table. And that's where I think a lot of these people are just schmoes and operatives and agents by some definition, because it looks to me like it's just still part of the big game of them trying to flood the playing field, so to say, with misinformation or disinformation, because, you know, it muddies the waters for the truth coming out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Well, you are absolutely one of those people who can bring the actionable intelligence, and you have, you know, many times. One of the places that you did it was at the Disclosure Project in June of 2023, held by Dr. Stephen Greer. Do you still work with Dr. Greer or with some of the guys who were there? You know, Mike Herrera, who I've had on the show a couple of times, and DC Long, who I still speak to here and there, actually, and he's been on the show. So is that something that you guys still stay in contact as far as the actual intelligence that all three of you brought that day and have brought still since then?
We do keep in touch, actually. I find Michael and DC to be extremely funny human beings.
Yeah, good
guys. And we get along great. So, yeah, I mean, we always discuss having more conversations, which now that you said that, it reminds me I should contact them and have a chat. It's a bit overdue, technically. Dr. Greer and I have stayed in contact, I guess, more as friends than professionals. I know he got hurt bad recently, but is doing better. So, you know, my hat goes off to him for his efforts. I've done some stuff with some of the production crew from his event. And there's supposed to be some sort of documentary coming out, but they're having issues. I mean, production stuff.
Right.
I guess it's just like building a house. You know, sometimes it doesn't go on schedule and everybody's like, that's how it happens. So yeah, one of those things is going on.
That's how that goes. No, but that's cool to hear that, you know, you've kept that contact. And, you know, I'd love to have you all on together if that could ever, you know, materialize. I think that'd be fantastic. I think everybody would enjoy that. So,
oh yeah, every time I'm on with Mike or DC, yeah, things are a bit interesting.
I think that would be a lot of fun. Very recently, in the series of episodes that I had put out on the traditional side of, you know, of the UAP podcast, I had been covering over the past couple of episodes the subject of remote viewing. And I think it's something that you've had experience with, yes?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I want to get to that today because it's a subject that I find extremely fascinating. Going back to Edgar Cayce, going back to Joe McMonagle, that's the person I was speaking about, actually, in the two-part series that I put out over the past week or two. Just really, really fascinating stuff, and the ability behind it of being able to essentially have space and time null and void to see different things in different times in different parts of the world.
Yeah, what things are way more complex than we've been allowed to consider. So this is where we need to take our brains and realize that, you know, like you're delving into remote viewing. Well, guess what you're going to find out? It's all legit. Now what do you do looking around the world about you, realizing that technically everyone has this power available to them?
Right.
Some people use it better than others, but we all have access to this skill set, just like we all have access to becoming the world's greatest guitarist. There's nothing stopping anyone from learning how to play a guitar better than they can right now, which might be that they can't. But that doesn't mean that you can't practice and learn and become proficient. And certainly some people are better at it than others. But this is no different of a practicable skill set than if somebody was going to. It is like a return on investment. You do know, like, if you put more time into practicing a guitar, you will get better.
Yeah,
that it functions. So it's the same thing with remote viewing, whatever people want to call it, this mysterious toolkit that nobody wants to talk about, you know, that the energy aspect of what's going on around us in mystery is something that we can work with.
Yeah, it's that's why it's so fascinating to me to think that, you know, we all have that ability within us. Just it's a matter of, again, how much time are we willing to spend to put into it, to tap into that, into.
Right. And now what do we do when we have to start to put our brains in the direction? Well, what if there's an aspect of humanity that's always been dealing with this, always been good at it? We don't even have words now for this type of classism, so to say. You know, when you have whole aspects of society that could be like a secret royalty based on cognitive skills or abilities. I mean, it gets really peculiar really fast to realize that, you know, we could have amongst us our own worst enemies, is that it could be, you know, high level mental enslavement.
Well, it's something that we know. It's not even really an opinion. It's something that we know that the U.S. government and both the Russian government have employed in spy games, is having remote viewers. And that's where, you know, a guy like Joe came in, where he was employed by the U.S. government, the CIA, the Army, to look into finding KGB spies. And then they also kind of said, hey, can you look into Mars and some alien bases that might be under some mountains? So, you know, he had a very long career with this, and I believe it's at the Monroe Institute, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. But what is your experience, Eric? What kind of experience have you had with remote viewing? Where is that road taking you?
My experience was that it started in my youth as some sort of offshoot project for one of the Alphabet agencies, was to work with children and to test for and or improve whatever was inherent in a child that made them a good remote viewer. And there's a gentleman by the name of David Morehouse, who has been interviewed twice now. I believe it was on the Danny Jones podcast. And in one of the videos, he discusses being in the United States remote viewing program in the late 70s, early 80s. And he mentions that they became privy to foreign nations having these programs that were involving children, and that it was almost immediately approved. Well, if they're doing it, we have to do it. So bingo, there was a program that was admitted to by one of the remote viewers, stating that they then took that program and started applying it to children. And that's what he stated. That supports my claim that I have said that when I was a kid, they were doing the Robert Monroe Institute remote viewing protocols training hemisync to us as children.
How were you chosen for that? How did that come about?
I guess through the testing at my school, that they were, you know, filtering through children and abilities. And I tested out really well. I was a smart son of a bitch in grammar school. It was so easy to me. I mean, to be completely honest, that's just putting it plain and simple. I feel like ridiculous saying it, because it should be obvious, but yet I guess some people found elementary school challenging. I found it like the easiest thing in the world as a kid, like reading, writing, math at an elementary level was so freaking easy.
And that kind of led you down that road and you found yourself in this program. What kind of experiences did you have there? Did you end up sticking with remote viewing? Did you see other kids that, you know, ended up becoming more involved with the program as yours went on?
It's very interesting that it was pretty complex. There was a decent amount of children around. It happened both on property for the school, off property at, you know, what they would call retreats or other facilities. So there was a lot going on with it in hindsight. They, I guess, do a really good job at hiding it in plain sight. But my interactions, you know, I guess the remote viewing side of it as a toolkit was interesting to be privy to and now understand better. But there was also, you know, abuses going on as well, which seemed to be somehow part of certain programs. So I don't want to implicate the Monroe Institute in so far as certain aspects, but I feel like that there were other groups that were intermingling certain groups. And so some aspects of one program overlap into other aspects of another program. And I don't think that it necessarily makes all parties liable to each other. That's some semblance of a disclaimer to that some people more culpable in this than others.
When you look back on it, do you remember different instances where you're like, man, I can't believe that I was part of that session and saw what I saw? I mean, did they put you through the ringer where you can say, you know, I looked back at this time or looked forward to this time? And
I think what I have more of a recollection of is that now my brain is happy because what was going on when I was a child, like as I was experiencing it at the time, they weren't explaining to us what we were doing. So it made no sense. So my brain is happy now is that I now came across as an adult what the Monroe Institute protocols and the question, how they go through with the ideogram to get to the information. When I came across that information now, which is later, from my perspective, it was a recollection of what we were doing when I was a kid. So to me, it went full circle because I was like, wow, now that makes sense. Now that someone explains and I see what this process is, they weren't filling me in. So I had no way to have closure on the activity because it made no sense with no explanation. But now with understanding and an explanation of the activity that I went in decades before, it feels great to just have that understanding and be like, now I know what they were doing. So you know, when they would ask me things like, what do you see? Mountains or a lake? Do you see land or water? Say whatever comes to your head. Whatever you say is right. When I was a kid, that made no sense to me. To be told that was just so bizarre. Just pick anything in my head. Yeah. And the answer is correct, makes no sense with no explanation. But now when they say that you're remote viewing and you're hitting a target and you're doing well, oh, well, okay. Well, at least there's some reasoning behind what's going on in this conversation right now. Whether you have value in the veracity of remote viewing is another thing, but at least you can understand what someone's trying to do in that exchange.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even being given that.
Have you kept up with it or have you been asked to use it by anyone in, you know, positions of power?
You know, something that seems interesting to me is that it's everybody seems to be really concerned about whether I remote view or not still. I would say that I don't feel comfortable with the term remote viewing because that's a very technical term for an activity that is defined by protocols and processes. So I would say by the definition of the question, no, I am not in the activity of remote viewing. But what I would say is that I've always seemed to have some skill that I refer to as knowing. And that is something that I seem to always be adept at. And it just works. I mean, there's lots of times I just know something, which is almost semantics with a remote viewer when they come back from a viewing, because the whole idea is just having information in your head where you can't really define where you got it from. You just know that you used none of your five senses to get it. And yet you're right. So that's knowing, right? If you ask me a question and I have the answer in my head, if I know the answer, but I don't even know how I know the answer or can explain, I'm no less wrong. So knowing can function if you're right.
It's kind of like, I don't know, it feels like a taboo subject for some people when they hear mm-hmm. the term and they're like, well, I'm not really sure what to think of that. But to your point, like you said earlier, it's something that everybody can tap into. It's just a matter of, like you said, practice and ability and, you know, what level are you starting off at, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, it would just be like it would be like as ridiculous as if we were in denial about guitars and people's ability to play guitar. Why would you be against everybody getting good at guitar if all this, you know, it's just this thing. And then once we realize the benefit of something, well, then we could start to, you know, A, just acknowledge that it exists.
Right.
You know, and then decipher how much we need it all the time or everywhere. But regardless, you know, we need to just consider that there's a reason that we have this skill set. And there's a reason that there's folks that want us to forget we have this skill set. Mm.
I think it's probably hard for people to wrap, you know, their heads around the fact that you can do that you can view a different time and space or, mm-hmm. you know, a different part of the country. You're just sitting in your own room. And this is something, mm-hmm. it's a skill that you can develop.
How often are you right? Where you actually can ascertain that you have no way to know that you are right, right? Like you have no means to define where your information came from. And I suggest that we're actually doing this more than we pay attention to. And I think if you focus on these types of things, you can increase the frequency and thus start training yourselves in the applications of these energies and intentions by just simply becoming observant to the frequency for which we're already doing it, which is more than you think.
Yeah. I think it's happened to all of us. You're like,
yeah,
man, you know, oh, I had a feeling to call you. Is everything okay? You know, and
something like that. Yeah. These gut feelings.
Right.
Yes. The little things in life, but there are certain reads of energies that there are at times you will find that plain and simple, there will be times where you know something, you're going to be right. The information will come out of your head and you're like, I have no idea how I knew that. But regardless, if it at that moment your information is correct, well, then you were right. You knew something without knowing and you connected to a truth without any experience.
And that's the nexus of remote viewing.
Pretty much is now being able to steer that ship, knowing that the activity can occur and does occur. Now it's just a matter of doing it with intention. Mm. You know, really? It's the difference between playing a guitar and walking over one by accident. They're both going to make noise.
It's a good point. It's a good analogy. Well, I'll get you out of here on this, Eric. I just want to give you the stage, give you the floor. Anything else on your mind that if you can get one message across today in this over an hour that we've spoken here, if there's something that you want people to take away from this conversation, what's the one thing you want people to walk away from this and say, boy, you know, that was really, really intriguing what Eric was saying.
Folks, you have to get into action. You can no longer just watch this show go on. It's time to fight back. It's time to start identifying the liars, who the con men are, who the gatekeepers are, because they're more prevalent in this conversation. And it would help the actual whistleblowers if you could sweep the shit off the floor before we arrive.
Well, there you have it. Eric Hecker, thank you so much. I have a feeling this isn't our last conversation. That's my remote viewing. I see us talking again
in the
future. I can see it right now in my mind. So until then, Eric, thank you so much again for spending all this time, for coming back here with me on UAP. And I look forward to talking to you again soon, because I know there's a lot more ground that we can cover with everything going on in the world today.
Absolutely, Steve. It was a great chat, and thanks for having me on.
Talk soon. Thank you.
And that will do it for this part two series with myself and Eric Hecker. Really, again, and I said it in the, you know, at the end of the interview right there with him, but honestly, again, just so happy that he was able to come back on. He doesn't do a lot of interviews. You know, it's kind of sporadic from what I've seen. So it is something that I feel honored that he is you know, comfortable enough to come on here on UAP with me to talk about all these things. And I am, you know, being truthful there at the end where I said I hope to be able to speak to him again in the future. I absolutely plan on speaking with Eric again. I think he has such a unique perspective on all of these subjects going on around us and his, you know, firsthand experiences, as he claims, in Antarctica. So really a unique opportunity and discussion every time we get to speak to Eric Hecker here on the show. So I hope you enjoyed that surprise. That was something that I teased a few weeks back on Twitter, that I would have a surprise guest on at the end of April, even though now this part two comes out at the beginning of May. But hopefully you enjoyed this two-part series. I really did, and I can't wait to bring out even more episodes of UAP in the very near future. Actually, coming up next week is a really, really cool interview I did with a man named Dan Harari, who you may have heard of before. Pretty famous in the UAP UFO circles. He's actually a publicist in Hollywood and works with a lot of celebrities and everything, but he himself has gotten into the UAP discussion within the past year or two. And his story, when I tell you, his story is absolutely fascinating. There were two different instances in our interview together where I actually physically got chills while we were talking. It's just really, really good stuff. So I'm really looking forward to putting that interview out for you next week. And Dan is a great guy, and we talk about a lot of different subjects. We talk about Contact in the Desert coming up, which is a huge conference coming up actually at the end of May. So you're going to hear about all that and his work with the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, which is a really cool mission that he has started and spearheaded, and has actually gathered some really, really big names to be a part of this new Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. So you're going to hear about all that next week with Dan Harari. Really cool guy and just an incredible story. So I can't wait to put that out for you next week right here on UAP Weekly. Until then, of course, don't forget to download, subscribe, rate. Don't forget to put those ratings or reviews out there on UAP, wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple and Spotify and everything like that. So I always appreciate all of the positive feedback. And if you want to reach out to me directly, you can do so through email or on social media. Email is sdieneruap@gmail.com. That's sdieneruap@gmail.com. If you want to reach out to me there, I'd be happy to respond to you any chance I get. Also on social media, mainly Twitter is where I'm at, but I try to get on the other spots too, like YouTube and TikTok. It's at UA Podcast 850 on Twitter and on the other social medias. So follow along, play along, and you can reach out to me there as well. But again, hopefully you enjoy this two-part series, and I can't wait to come back to you with more as we move forward here on UAP and UAP Weekly. So until next time, Stephen Diener here saying again, thank you so much for everything, for all your support. And I can't wait to talk to you again soon right here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast. Be well. Talk to you soon. Thanks.